Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Last time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
I hate this episode so much. I feel like I'm Picard right now with this, why are there fucking kids on the fucking starship? Like, I want to do real adult sci-fi shit. I'm vetoing the episode, Ben.
Wait, are you really seriously trying to veto right now?
Yeah, I am. You were unprepared for this, weren't you?
I'm never prepared when you try and veto. I kind of like this episode.
I dislike this episode so much that I don't know that I've seen it in a very, very, very long time. So.
Well, then you've made my decision for me, Adam. Counter veto. I think you should give it a second chance. And I think that that second chance should come at the cost of you ruining another season for everybody.
I really hate that I talked you into the counter veto. I wish I hadn't done that. That's some bullshit right there.
And now, the conclusion.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast, especially today. I'm one of your hosts, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Benjamin Harrison. Adam, what is happening?
I want to read to you a quote about today's episode, and I just want to see how that lives in the room. Quote begins, "When Michael Piller bought the premise, I thought he was completely insane. An away team rematerializes on the transporter as children with adult minds. I tried again and again to bury this idea, which of course meant that I would get saddled with the inevitable rewrite when the script came in. I just thought it was a ludicrous idea and wanted nothing to do with it." That was Ronald D. Moore, Ben, about today's episode.
Wow.
Like the last line of defense between the script and production. He could have stopped this whole thing, and I'm sorry he didn't.
I had a conversation with a good friend of ours about how hard it is to really put things on the line at work.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a lot of people that, there's a lot of mediocrity in the workplace because people don't rock the boat for fear of their job. So you wind up with a lot of people that don't, you know, have much passion about what they're doing because if they did, it would be dangerous to their employment.
Right. Yeah, isn't it interesting how much of that you have to suspend to stay employable?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't, you know, that's headcanon that's what's at play here, but
that's pretty germane to our times too. Like, I think you know, by the time this comes out, the whole Pepsi advertisement debacle will be many weeks past.
Let's invite Kendall to set. She has a heart out in 45 seconds.
There's someone in that production timeline that could step out and say no, but it's the same thing you just described, is that to be the person that says this is a bad idea often sees that as a career-limiting move. And so they would rather see the train wreck happen than attempt to stop it.
Right. I mean, alternatively, they would be open to seeing if a weird idea works, because often weird ideas do work on this show.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should begin discussing whether or not this one does, Ben.
All right. I was worried that you had totally prejudged the episode, but I mean, you attempted to prejudge it, but I put a stop to that, Adam.
You always do. Ben, it's an episode that might as well be a cry for help. It's season 6, episode 7. Rascals.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
We start this episode in a bunk bed that is coming back from... Is this a previa or a bunk bed? Or is it the new, like, in-between guy?
It can't be a bunk bed because bunk beds only seat 2.
Oh, yeah.
And this has got, like... It's got the forward cabin and then some command chairs in the back. It's sort of a, it's sort of like a van on the inside.
It's a little bit Winnebago-y on the inside. Yeah. Like got some room to move around. There's like a galley kitchen.
There's a sink that you don't want to drink the water out of.
No. Yeah.
That's some gross water in there.
Yeah. There's a composting toilet.
It always just smells a little bit wet.
Yeah, there's not really a way to manage the air inside this place.
If you were to choose 4 more mismatched people for a road trip, I don't know that you could choose any worse than these 4. It's Picard, Ro, Keiko, and Guinan.
I feel like Picard and Guinan could do like a barbecue tour of the southeastern United States together.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they should take a separate shuttle.
Yeah, but Picard and Ro is always going to be awkward.
Why would Ro want to be with these people?
Keiko is here, and it's just very unusual to see her not fighting with Chief O'Brien, so we don't quite know what to do with her character yet.
Oh, I know what to do with her character.
Alien queen it?
Yeah. It's not too late to blow her out the hatch.
So they're coming back from a conference, right?
Before we even begin, like, I want to headcanon the invitations to these people. Like, you got to imagine Picard and Guinan are first, and they're talking it over. And then Keiko overhears them or something, and they can't get rid of her.
What was the event? It was a conference, right?
Oh, you have to excuse me. I'm drinking just extremely hot whiskey.
Really?
Yeah. I with you am sort of getting off of the beers.
Yeah.
On this show
makes you too burpy. It means a lot of extra editing.
Right. So now, I thought as extra punishment, I would just go. Room temperature rye whiskey.
Ooh.
Because I hate myself.
Well, that should make for an interesting episode, Adam. Yeah, I don't even think that they were at a conference. I think that they were all there for kind of different purposes, right?
Yeah.
So maybe what happened is that thing that sometimes happens in school where like you bring an idea to the teacher and the teacher like opens it up to the room and you wind up getting stuck with a group project that you never planned for because the wrong 3 hands shot up.
That sounds great.
You know, it's like you were just like asking a question about something in history class, and now you have 3 remedial students who need some extra credit to pass the class doing a group project with you.
The hierarchy here is really strange too, because like Keiko is not in the same league as these 3. At all. This is like putting Mott in the shuttlecraft. What is she doing there?
I
can imagine
plants
like
on her lap. I mean, she's
O'Brien like sheepishly asking Guinan if she can hang out with his wife, like because she can't make friends on her own.
I mean, we joke about women often becoming potted plants on this show. I think that Keiko is almost literally only here because of potted plants.
Right.
Like these plants wind up being a plot beat, and maybe that's it. Maybe that's why she's there.
The writers are like, oh, you're complaining about a lack of female characters. Well, here's every single one of them.
And here's here's the captain with a duffel bag full of broken terracotta.
Look at these fragments.
Just to really drive the point home.
Witness how we diminish them further.
Look on my works, you mighty. So they're just about back at the Entrepreneur when they get word that there's an emergency on some other planet, and they're like, "All right, well, get the engine warmed up and punch it the second we're aboard." And just then, they swerve off the road into a space butthole.
We're caught in some sort of energy field.
As you do. I mean, they started hitting the rumble strip, and then before they knew it, they were right in there.
Yeah. And it's one of those tense but not tense, because we've done it 50 times now. Are we going to get them out of the shuttle in time? And they throw the transporter into gear. The shuttle explode, and they materialize on the pad. But just before they materialize, O'Brien is radioing up to the bridge that
there's a 40% drop in mass. I may have lost one of them.
But instead, what O'Brien's done is beamed aboard four children in their place.
I know, it's cute, right?
With slightly ill-fitting child-sized uniforms.
Not terribly ill-fitting, though.
Not at all. Not as ill-fitting as they should be.
Actually,
they should be puddling in these clothes.
Ro's sleeves are like way longer than her arms, but like the rest of it is like it like fits her, right?
Yeah, I mean too well is my point.
Yeah, because like, if they got de-aged, it doesn't make any sense that something would happen to their clothes. Also, you know, like Hulk's clothes don't grow when he hulks out,
except. Like, later on, when they study the broken shuttlecraft, they find all of the materials, like, delaminated and, like, turned into their component parts, so they really should be beamed onto the shuttle pad in some form of gross undress.
Well, thankfully they didn't make that decision.
The look on O'Brien's face here is the I've made a terrible mistake face.
Yeah.
Like, it seems momentarily that this is his fault.
Yeah, he's got the look of someone who knows what they did.
Maybe
it is his fault, and he just knows more about transporters than anybody else, so he can like make them all believe that it was something beyond his control.
That's exactly where I was going, which is like, this has always been about Keiko. It's just unfortunate that there was some collateral damage and it happened to be Ro and Picard and Guinan. Like, he wishes it didn't go down this way.
Yeah. They show up in Six Bay and they're getting scanned, and the doctor's like,
their DNA structure is now consistent with those of pre-adolescence. But as far as we can tell, only their bodies were changed.
At least that's okay. And the captain, and I think that this is the same kid. Is this the same kid that played Renee?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real Harry Potter-ish.
Yeah. The young captain in his Oshkosh Bagosh Starfleet uniform like hops off the bio bed and he's like,
I'm going to work.
You've obviously got a lot of science to do. You can do it on these three. I'm going to work.
You got to go higher, Ben. Higher.
I'm going to work.
T. Earl Grey Hart.
Number one. What's the status of the engine efficiency?
Mr. Dater.
I sure hope we don't run into any Ferengis on this mission.
Everyone's looking at each other like, you can't be serious, right? Everyone who's not been rascalized.
Yeah.
They've just been rascaled. Everyone who's not been rascalized, like, is looking at each other and they're like, you can't be fucking serious, right?
Yeah.
And Baby Picard is the only one who is like in complete denial about the situation entirely. He is ready to go to work.
Right. And he starts in on the bridge like everybody's going to take this in stride, which is,
he's acting like he's been injured instead of mutilated, which is more like what happened.
And so he comes onto the bridge and starts barking orders like, put it in warp 8. Let's get out of here. Pip, pip, cheerio.
Mr. Worf. Fire phases.
and they're all just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the doctor pops onto the bridge and she's like, hey, Cap, I know you're busy explaining that you're the real captain and everybody should just behave as normal, but let's have a quick private chat in your ready room. And she's like, dude, whether or not this is traumatic for you, like, we don't really know the half of what happened. And if you start dumbing up like a kid, we're in big trouble if you're still in command. So maybe
we can't afford to have you pee your pants on the bridge.
I've been out of diapers for 6 years.
So much of this doesn't make sense, Ben. Like, a prepubescent brain pan is physically smaller than an adult brain pan. So there's no reason why they should be as intelligent as their adult counterparts. Like, they should be compromised mentally right off the bat, shouldn't they?
Hey, man, there's a lot that we don't know about brain science or transporter science. I'm willing to let that one slide.
All right.
But yeah, so the doctor talks some sense into Picard, and he sees the fact that that this is like, potentially just the first step. So he walks, it's a very adult decision for this little fella. He walks out onto the bridge and says, come on to Riker.
I'm ready to make adult decisions.
Take command.
I'm going to go take a nap now.
Take command in my place. And please send down that recipe for warm milk.
Yeah. And, like, of all people aren't used to calling him captain. For some reason, Data can't get it straight. Yeah. Like, Data's all squicked out about him, too. Like, you should be able to tell Data something once, and it sticks.
Mm-hmm.
But he's even having a hard time not calling him sir.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Data's pathways get used to somebody, and they...
Right.
He misses them when they're not there, so.
Mr. Data, call me sir.
Captain, will you be sleeping in your bed or in the trunk at the foot of it?
From here we do some around the horn.
Yeah, there's
we do some vignettes with the kiddified crew people.
There is a solid like 15 minutes of fun and games with the different kidified characters. It's Keiko trying to be a mother and have a moment of marital intimacy with O'Brien, and he's like, get the fuck off of me, this is fucking terrifying, I don't like it one bit.
As dumb as Keiko has been written from the start, this is the dumbest she's ever been.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, she doesn't recognize that she reads as 12 years old.
Yeah.
Like, how could you not know that? It just happened.
Like, when she starts cuddling up on him, like, I guess I understand, like, the, you know, like, she's going through something, so she wants a hug. Anybody would. But, like, yeah, she acts, like, completely shocked when... when he is having a tough time dealing with it.
There is some great nonverbal acting by Colomini in this scene.
Yeah.
Like, he is just so physically uncomfortable. And, like, again, I wish they made a slightly different choice with him, because all you see is his discomfort, but you don't necessarily see his guilt. And I would have loved to see just even a little bit on that side, from that perspective, out of him. of like, oh my God, like, what have I done?
What did you think about the fact that he was also a little unable to wrap his mind around this being Keiko? Like, when she gets the drink and he like tells her it's hot as though she's a small child.
I think they're doing that thing where they're not completely there when they're with each other. And I think this is a pattern of behavior they've had from the start. Like Keiko is not thinking when she puts her arm around him, because she is sort of a burlesque of a wife in the same way that Chief O'Brien like looks at her as a child because he's not really there. He's never really there when he's with her. So he's not mindful enough to put it together that's Keiko. And so he treats her as a child who might burn her hand on the hot coffee.
Dang, son.
I mean, this is the conclusion to a path they've been on for quite a while, I think.
Little girl Keiko must be so bummed that she's not hanging out with Ro and Guinan, who are, like, drawing pictures and jumping on the bed.
Yeah, like, how cool is it to be single right now?
Yeah.
Like, probably pretty great compared to this. Like, they can't show this, but, like, do they sleep in the same bed?
Jesus.
And I'm not saying that in a sexual way. I'm saying, like, where does she sleep?
Well, it also, like...
That's got to be very hurtful.
I mean, like, it also is one of these, like... It's one of these things that kind of defies our understanding of, like, what an adult mind is. Like, sexuality is part of an adult's brain and, like, what they think about. And so, like, if their brains are 100% the same, that's got to be, like, such a horror show, right? Like, to be Ro and to like have a mental image of yourself as like a totally attractive like young person who could definitely get some if you wanted, and
who has nailed Riker over and over again,
and then you look in the mirror and you are a child.
Ro's youthful counterpart appears to be the youngest looking of all of them.
I felt like she was pretty well cast. Maybe it's just the loaf like makes her look more like Ro, but.
Yeah.
The Ro and the Guinan ones, I mean, like, from a look standpoint, are pretty good. It seems like maybe they replaced the voice on the Guinan one to make her sound good, too.
I thought the same thing. And I, you know, occasionally the show notes will have, like, this was like a season one episode, that one guy who was in charge of that town that, like, brought a water system into it.
You're talking about the Ensigns of Command, the episode where Data nukes the water supply.
Right. How they had to ADR that guy's entire dialogue. It felt like they did the same thing to young Guinan, but I couldn't find any evidence of that. I mean, it clearly was not a sync for most of it.
No, it's definitely looped in. Who knows if it's the same kid or not.
I mean, she was great. The Ro was great. I think in descending order... the Keiko was third grade, maybe.
Well, that's not necessarily the actress, but the material that she was given, almost certainly.
I completely agree. Like, this is not on them. Once again, the show really loads up some young actors with maybe stuff that doesn't really give them a chance to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you gone find it within yourself?
I guess we should also talk about the scene where Troy like comes and does some counselor with Picard, and he's like trying on the action jacket, and it's like dad's suit jacket kind of thing.
This is fucking crazy. This is the next day. They've decided that like the doctor is going to medically look into the situation, you know, see if it's reversible or whatever. And young Picard's, like, making plans for the rest of his life. Like, he seems like he's pretty much resolved to choose a new life because he can't be Captain Potter.
Do you think that you wouldn't have those thoughts, though?
Immediately?
I feel like...
I think my first and primary thought would be, I wouldn't want to leave sickbay. Like, I would want to subject myself to all the tests and do whatever it took to get back to normal. Like, I would not be ready to give that up after a day.
I just think that, like, he's not on duty. He has a lot of downtime, and that's a lot of, like, looking into your own thoughts, whether or not you're in Six Bay. I mean,
I'd be world's youngest Dixon Hill at this point. Like, I'd be I'd be in the holodeck. The one place where it's okay for a 12-year-old to do weird shit.
Well, the fun and games come to an end when the entrepreneur shows up at this planet where they're going to be doing a rescue. And instead of a rescue, what they find themselves in is an extremely lethargic space battle.
Like, two Klingon jalopies decloak and start dropping bangers on them big time. But because there's two of them, and the Enterprise was caught with their pants down, like, their shields are down, their warp engines are down, like, almost immediately. They are crippled pretty fast.
Yeah.
Because they're outnumbered.
It's just weird because, like, there's, like, a sustained, like, five-second shot of these two birds of prey, like, converging on the entrepreneur, which is just sitting there in space taking hits. And, like, it cuts to the bridge, and Riker's like, what's the status of the shields? What's the status of the phasers? Damage report. What's going on level 42?
God,
and it's like,
I know.
Fucker, fire back.
I felt the same way.
Like,
this is like
photons now.
You could never say this about Kirk as captain. Kirk returns fire almost immediately, just about every time.
If not first.
He doesn't care about loss of life support in the Arboretum or whatever. Like, disable the attackers.
Yeah. It's just, I think it's just bad direction, but...
Are you laying this at the foot of Adam Nimoy, the director of the episode?
I am partially laying it at Adam Nimoy's feet. I mean, I think that there are a couple of problems with the script, but I don't hate the script. What I hate is the editing. I think that there are a lot of scenes that play for cheese that shouldn't, because they're kind of... And I mean, like, that could be coming from Nimoy. I mean, just because he's a Nimoy doesn't mean he gets treated with kid gloves. This is an outside the pocket podcast, but but man, there are so many scenes where, like, cutting out like half a beat earlier would have saved it, and they just don't.
This is something that we run into with our own podcast. Like, you can really affect the comedy of a moment by either cutting in an interstitial right away or, like, waiting that beat before you do. Like, there's a ton of comedy choices that you can make retroactively in the edit.
Right.
That maybe, if you're on set, you just sort of shoot for coverage and then see what happens during the edit.
Right, but like, and like, something we do on our show is sometimes you find enough pieces to make a joke that didn't actually happen when we recorded. I mean, like, that doesn't happen that often, but like, like, I would say that, like, every 10 shows I edit, I am able to put in, like, an A-plus joke that didn't actually happen when we sat down to record, because I had, like, something that you said and something that I said that sound really funny together, you know? And this could be a really fun, tight episode, and I think that where the fun goes away is almost entirely in missing the timing of things.
I think a major reason for that is because there is the need to cover so much. There are so many characters in so many different places. And as the ship gets boarded, they have to show all of this in such a slapdash way that in order to communicate an idea or a feeling, often it is just a stupid-looking Ferengi looking like he got goosed in the butt before we cut to a different scene. Like, it's just, when that's all you have... I think they wrote themselves into this corner, and I don't know how you edit or direct your way out of it.
Yeah.
I think you could do a lot of addition by subtraction, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Like, maybe there shouldn't have been as many rascals. There shouldn't have been as many in the boarding party.
Right. I mean, just for example, what if it was only Picard that had this happen to him, and the gambit of using kids to take the ship back was him, you know, marshaling the other kids. I mean, maybe that's too much like disaster when he's like stuck in the turbo lift, but like just spitballing here.
Well, what happens if Data is on that shuttle or Worf?
Right.
Like, What if we swapped in and swapped out some different characters? What's a young Riker like?
Young Riker was actually my rap name in the early aughts.
Pretty dope.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurses the disease. Help me more. You'll have to go again.
So yeah, like the rest of it is kind of just like the Ferengis beam on board. They've like, I guess they bought these two Klingon ships. And their idea is that they're going to sell the entrepreneur on the Romulan market. And it's kind of like Red Dawn in space after this.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of like the Ferengis walking down a hallway, and they've got Wolverines spray painted on the walls.
The Ferengi do not make a good boarding party. From a physicality standpoint, you know, they're just sort of hopping from room to room. They're going in singles and doubles. Like they're for two ships, they beam over like eight people.
Yeah. They do not beam over enough guys. And also like, I mean, like there's a scene where young Picard is like, I'm going to get on the elevator. And the door opens and there's a Ferengi there. And he is like, he's got like 2 inches on this Ferengi.
I love that young Picard doesn't have any inner monologue. I'm going to play the flute. No one can make me practice.
Yeah, and there's like a bunch of scenes in here that are pretty fun. Like, you know, like their little gambit with the remote control car, like having they have this idea of like
their contractual obligation to Brian Bonsall and the character of Alexander continues. God.
Do you think Brian Bonsall has like compromising pictures of Michael Piller?
That can be the only explanation.
He's a small child with an evil secret.
Yeah.
The plan is that they distract the Ferengi that is in the transporter room, and then they wind up getting communicator badges on all these Ferengi. And
this is after the Ferengi boarding party has beamed down a bunch of the crew to the planet surface.
Right. They're like emptying
out. Sort of
out
leaving
the
kids behind. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's an important detail because it sort of forces the kids into the position of taking back the ship where they can't partner with any of the adults. They really have to do it themselves.
Yeah. And it's a good plan. Like it's they're beaming the Ferengi onto the transporter pad behind a force field, and like one by one they take them down, and it really does have like the guerrilla warfare scenes in Red Dawn vibes to it.
Wolverines!
I'm totally feeling the Red Dawn vibe in like theme. But there's something that's just off about it in practice, and I'm wondering if it's more than just because of their relative ages. Like, these were older teenagers in Red Dawn, and they were using lethal force.
Oh, Adam, I'm not really trying to debate this issue with you. I'm just trying to give you good drops to put in.
Thanks. If you think I'm going to give this episode any kind of effort, you're mistaken.
Oh, no.
You have to try as hard as you can.
Patronus!
Fire con Dios, Adam!
One of the scenes I thought that was pretty funny was Picard trying to use the children's computer. Mm-hmm. And it's totally like Mr. DNA. They don't use Majel Barrett's voice. It's like, hey, it looks like you're trying to see a map of the computer.
Press the red button if somebody's predating you.
If you're married to an older man who sees you as a 12-year-old girl, hit the blue button. And Picard is just like, I don't like this. I need to make the computer work. And so he stages this tantrum out in the hallway where a Ferengi captor is. And he takes whatever ego or sense of command.
What do you want?
I need to see my father.
Any sort of adult Adam in his brain.
I need to see him right now.
And completely destroys it.
I need to see him now.
Just boils it away into a tantrum that this young actor's career might never recover from.
Now, now, now.
Got a weird interest of turning his now into a cell phone ring. But I think it would just make me angry. So this Ferengi is like, oh my God, shut the fuck up. Fine, I'll take you to your dad. Who is he? Smash cut to the conference room where Riker's up against his leaning window. And in walks his quote-unquote son, who is just so happy to see him.
Dad!
I've missed you so much!
I guess he's able to transmit to Riker, like reboot the command codes, but only on the kiddie computer in the schoolroom. And conveniently, the head Ferengi gives Riker the order to, like, show the computer to one of the lackeys. And Riker uses this as a distraction. So while he is giving like the most boring techno babble to the lackey, he's like surreptitiously keying in the command codes to the other computer.
Yeah, Riker's got to do this because the head Ferengi guy's like, look, you're gonna let us into the computer. We don't have the password. You're going to let us in and you're going to teach us how to use it, or we're going to kill all the kids, starting with your son, who clearly loves you and you clearly love him.
Yeah. It's like going through customs and they make you unlock your phone, you know?
Right. And Riker's like, fine. And he goes through like an incredible bout of technobabble.
Riker's got to be thinking about letting the daemon kill baby Picard, though, right? I mean, he's subjected Picard to what he thought was lethal force in the past.
Yeah.
He's got to be like, man, that chair is me if these Ferengis get it.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty good way to advance his career.
Do you recognize this Daimon, the top Ferengi?
I mean, they all look alike, don't they, Ben?
This guy was the cop in The Big Lebowski who, like, shows him back to his car in the police impound.
I'll just check with the boys down at the crime lab. They got 4 more detectives working on the case. The god is working in shifts.
Leads.
Oh, my God. You know what? Like, there was something about his enunciation that felt very familiar to me in that way. But, yeah, that totally did it for me. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That guy's great.
I'll never watch this episode again, but it makes me wish I had known that before watching it. I might have appreciated it more.
Okay, well, they get all the Ferengis stuck in the transporter room. Young Picard walks into the ready room with a dustbuster and says, I believe you're in my chair.
And the Daemon's like, you're going to have to put me in jail in chiefs. I don't know what the fuck.
The Daemon is like, here's your ship back. The side view mirror broke off. And I think one of my men used it as a toilet.
Perfect.
I am the cutest of all. There are 4 lights.
The button on the episode is some of the children assembled in the transporter room where they will be transformed back into their older bodies. They've solved the genetic mystery. Like, there is a deep sea story buried in here where the doctor realizes that... that there's some genetic patterns and, you know, missing genomes and rhizomes and what have you. Like, they figure out how to beam the MacGuffin out of these kids and make them adult again.
Yeah.
Picard steps off of the pad, newly bald, rubs a hand over his skull, and is like, yeah, I'm back, baby.
What if he'd been like, I'm back, baby. I'm back, baby.
we're losing all of our British viewership. Yeah, they're gone after this.
I was hoping to take a tour and hit London at some point in the future, but we may have just foreclosed on that as an opportunity.
Yeah. There's so little to joke about in this episode. Felt like we had to kill something precious.
Mm.
Like the hope of a tour.
Mm. Weirdly, Roe is not in there, and not exactly raring to go, because old Guinan heads back to the schoolroom, and Roe is in there doing crayons and kind of inhabiting the mentality of the 12-year-old body that she is in. Like, Guinan is talking to her as though she's a child, and she's kind of talking as though she's a child. Very weird.
This is a variation of a conclusion that we get all the time on this show, which is like, the consequence of this could be really terrible for a certain sort of personality. And, you know, there's a sweetness about this scene where Ro wants to hang on a little longer to her youth, a youth that the first time through was pretty terrible in a lot of ways. But mm-hmm. they never play it for dark in a way that it could be. Like, yeah. Ro is a very dark character with a super dark past, and instead it's a little twinkly toward the end, and by the time the episode's over, you know, you're confident she's going to have her time as a kid, and then she's going to be an adult again, and then all four of these people are never going to mention it again. like they're going to get over it, but it would be interesting if, you know, notes of this were carried through.
Right.
Because, like, I think we're both in agreement here. Like, the way that you grow a character in many ways is to damage it.
It doesn't always have to be damaged, but the character has to go through things that are hard that change them.
Right. Yes. Maybe damage isn't the right word, and instead challenge is. But.
Yeah, like, I think that, like, the damage the character thing is something that I'm really tired of in contemporary television.
Mm.
I just started watching The Expanse.
Oh, yeah?
And,
I've heard that's really, really good.
Yeah, I've only watched, like, two episodes of it, and I read the first novel, and I really enjoyed the novel, and there's an inciting incident in the first season of the show where the main character makes a decision that is, like, definitely setting him up for, like, it being revealed that he kind of betrayed everybody that he works with later on. And it's not from the book. Like, in the book, like, they're all just going and doing the right thing. And in that way, it's a very Star Trek-y inciting incident. And in the TV show, like, it has, like, the character has to have that damage. Like, they have to plant things in characters now where it can have dramatic explosions later. And I'm not writing off the entire TV show, and I have really enjoyed the first two episodes so far, but I'm a little tired of that being the default in character arcs these days.
Well, it sure seems to be the default in, like, origin stories.
Yeah.
And I agree with you on many parts of what you just said, but, like, in this instance, like, it's,
yeah.
I think it's okay for stuff to happen in a series to have effects down line.
I agree. I think I'm just saying it's like
show.
It's a pendulum swing, you know? Like this
yeah.
this show sort of is the high side of the other side of the swing.
Yeah. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did like the episode, Adam.
Hmm.
I think it's very imperfect in a number of ways that we have elucidated here, but I think it's ultimately like a worthwhile experiment, and there's enough fun in it that I enjoyed watching it. How about yourself?
The hole/holes in the plot were just so big that I couldn't get over them. Like, these were the stupidest hijackers in maybe, definitely in Star Trek history, but maybe in television history. Like, what was their plan? Like, their plan was to take over the Enterprise, check, beam the crew down to the planet to mine for this valuable ore, check. But I guess retaining control of the Enterprise was not among their goals. Like, the idea that... The idea that the kids get the jump on them and then lock up the 8 people in their boarding party is one thing. But how can they not be in communication with their counterparts in the Klingon ships? And as soon as they take control of the Enterprise again, why aren't the Klingon ships firing on them again? Because because Geordi says early on it's going to take hours to get the shields and the warp drive and the weapons working again. Like... this is still a crippled ship.
Yeah.
That for some reason they aren't able to retake because of their stupid A plan. Like, oh my God. It just drove me nuts. It made me wish that we got an episode where the hijackers were competent and scary. Because we could have gotten a crew turned into kids story and also a very scary threat. But we can't have kids and a scary threat in the same episode. That would be too much.
Well, Adam, do you want to see if there's some P1s to take your mind off of your troubles?
You're trying to cool me off a little bit?
Yeah.
All right.
I know that P1s always make your day, so.
Yeah, they do.
Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority 1 message comes from Jamie. It is for Sarah, the better half of Team Badass Robot. The message goes like this. Congratulations on your graduation. I'm more than proud of you and what you have accomplished. Here's to our continuing adventures and many great away missions yet to come. And thanks for telling me about this great podcast for This Old Enterprise.
Oh, that's great. Congrats, Sarah.
If only we had known that would become such a thing, like, that would have been a great show title.
Yeah. I don't think we thought of that until about 50 or 60 episodes into the show, though.
Yeah, it took a long time to find that bit. Pretty glad we did, though.
Yeah.
Wow, it is graduation time, isn't it, Ben?
I want to think of all the bits. Why can't I think of the bits before I make my podcast?
That's a great show title. But I could think of a better one. How about This Old Enterprise?
Oh, you're dusting a little Kevin in there.
Yeah.
That's creepy, man.
Yeah.
I'm a man of special conscience.
I killed them all. All the Hoosnock. Everywhere. There's no punishment to fit my crime.
I love Rishon. She makes the best tea.
Please read the next P1, Ben.
Next priority one message is a personal message from D Halps to J Mac. And it goes like this, Adam. A Klingon walks into a bar and orders a bowl of gach. Pouring him some blood wine, the bartender sees the Klingon's been stabbed with a batleth, pinning the steering wheel from a bird of prey to his abdomen. The bartender asks, what's with the wheel? Ha ha ha! It's driving me nuts! Happy birthday, old friend. May you die well.
I want to do the Uhura laugh from Star Trek 6. You know, and she's doing the
Oh man,
what a delight.
That is fun. I don't know how to pronounce any Klingon thing.
I like hearing you try.
I feel like there's a correct way to write Klingon, but maybe when you send in a P1, give a little pronunciation guide.
Oh yeah, let's go phonetical.
Write it out phonetic this. Yeah, yeah.
Well, phonetical or not, you can participate in this P1 experiment by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100, commercial messages are $200, and they most definitely help in the ongoing production of our program.
Thanks, guys.
Ben?
What's that, Adam?
I'm afraid to ask. Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda? Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda! I did.
Ben, we were told that we didn't use the drop on a recent episode.
Really?
Yeah. No Shimoda drop. Do you think that's true? I feel like we're pretty good at using the drop.
I've definitely forgotten a couple of times, but I feel like you usually catch it when I do.
Yeah, maybe I just didn't. Maybe that's bad QA.
Maybe that's... It could be my fault. Could be your fault. Either way, oh my God. I hope that people will forgive us. My Shimoda in this episode was the Ferengi who got stuck on watching the transporter room duty. they drive that remote control car in there, and then he like winds up kind of chasing it down the corridor and grabbing it. And when he takes it back to the transporter room, he sets it on the floor and then like crouches over it, brings his eyes within inches of it to inspect it. It's such a weird choice.
It's like a choice made for composition instead of story.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a good reason.
Like, I don't want to bag on young Mr. Nimoy. I think this is his directorial debut on the show, but what the fuck is that about?
As if there was any question about whose pocket we are or are not in. What the fuck was that about is about as clear of a statement.
Adam, did you have a Shimoda?
I do. I mean, the cop-out would just be to give the Shimoda to the episode and to all those responsible, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep it in the story. I feel like Data at times has got to feel like the gifted kid in the beginner's class.
I know the feeling, Adam.
So frustrated with who's with him. And when the ship is getting taken over... That's got to be one of those moments. We talked about it earlier. Like, how long does it take to return fire? So long. How long does it take to return fire on the boarding party on the bridge?
Right, because it's just two guys in their fucking pajamas that show up on the bridge. Like, Worf should be good enough to take those two guys out very quickly.
That's what I'm saying. Not only should Worf be fast enough on the draw, but... Well, one of the boarding party materializes right next to Data.
Yeah.
Data could have, with his super fast reflexes, reached out and grabbed the guy's ears, ripped them off, and torn off both of his arms and flung him across the bridge.
Yeah, and beaten the other one to death with those
arms. Yeah, in the time it takes for Worf to do that, in the slow time it takes for Worf to fire across the bridge, like downrange,
right, like miss them and then get hit, like Worf's got the high ground and very badly misses and also takes a hit.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if Data has been compromised by spending so much time with the humans. Like, he's just slow and maybe bored, but also like this is in keeping with how much we know he wants to die. Like, he allows himself to be taken prisoner. He joins a party that gets beamed down to the surface more or less wordlessly. Like, of all the superpowers that they show Data having, they never show his super speed other than as a typist.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if he's a fast typer, if he's got that Mavis Beacon speed, then... He should be able to Mavis Beacon the shit out of someone.
Yeah.
And incapacitate them. So I'm going to give my Shimoda to Data, long story short, for, I guess, going along with it.
Yeah.
This whole thing.
Failing to tie all the guns into pretzels.
Yeah.
Yarmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
Moms. Can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness. And it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura Frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura Frame to love it. And I love it too. Because when you give an Aura Frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures. You're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Ben, I hesitate to ask, but do we have a better episode coming up next time?
Our next episode is Season 6, Episode 8, A Fistful of Datas. A holodeck fantasy goes awry, sending Worf and his son into a Wild West showdown with a villain who's a dead ringer for Data. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
If I still had a veto, I would veto this episode.
Yeah, this
too
would,
straight.
This would have been a smarter one to save your veto for.
Yes, I remember this episode, Ben.
You're not excited to watch it?
Not at all. I think, you know what? There were terrible clunkers in the first couple of seasons. There have been clunkers sprinkled about this entire series. Man, I don't know if there have been two in a row quite like this. You know?
Need I remind you that we're not that far removed from Time's Arrow parts 1 and 2, Adam?
Yeah, but they used a summer to break those up. We get these back to back. Can you imagine dabbling in Star Trek The Next Generation starting in the middle of season 6? You know what? I've heard about this Star Trek The Next Generation show. I think it might be time to give it a try. And the first episode you see is fucking, I'm Captain Picard. And the second episode is a Worf-Alexander Wild West showdown.
I don't know if I like this show.
It's a show that doesn't want to be Star Trek anymore. That's what it's going through right now.
Yeah. It's having it's casting about in a lot of directions.
I know the feeling.
Well, that's our next episode, whether we like it or not, Adam.
Indeed. Well, one thing we do like a lot is the continuing support from our viewers, both their support and their willingness to converse and at sometimes forgive, as made apparent through their conversations with us online. We've got the Reddit and the Facebook and the Twitter. All are great ways to talk about us and the show.
Yeah. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusa, who makes a lot of the other music you hear on the show. We should thank the great folks at MaximumFun.org for all their support.
I feel like I've turned into a real, like, Cannibal the Musical audio commentary track. I do feel pretty buzzed from this whiskey right now. We should choose an episode into the future that we know we can't veto and just get shithoused for it.
Well, they're all really good after this, so it's hard to sign off on that.
Well, should this be the one? The Fistful of Datas?
Oh, that's kind of tempting.
Oof. Let's think about it.
Let's ponder it, Adam. Well, one way or another, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And an episode of The Greatest Generation that is going to stumble into work drunk the next day.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.